Okay, has everyone got a copy of the assignment? Alright, if not, it's already up on the webpage, or if you have a friend who hasn't come today and they you don't give them a copy or whatever, it's on the webpage. Alright, so what I'm going to do today is go through the assignment, talk it over, give a general overview, talk a little bit about what the end product of the assignment is, which is basically calculating the signal-to-noise ratio for a simulated frequency modulation system. As part of this, well, everything I've covered in this course so far has been to do with continuous analog systems, so continuous in time and in amplitude, as opposed to discrete time, digital time, and quantized signals. And any time you need to simulate a continuous system in a computer, such as in software like MATLAB, we have to take into account the fact that we're actually implicitly digitising the system. So I'll talk a little bit about a few of the things you need to be aware of in that situation. And then after I've talked about the assignment, I didn't get a lot of feedback from the survey I handed out, but what I will do is go through the just briefly over the solutions to some of the exercises where at least two people indicated that they would like some further assistance with those questions. So all the solutions are already on the web page, so you should have been able to download those already. So I won't go through them in a lot of detail, but I'll point out the key things that you need to know. Okay, so alright, the main task for the assignment is to simulate an FM communication system in terms of modulating some message signal. We simulate propagation through a communications channel by adding random noise to that modulated signal, and we simulate the receiver component of the communication system. So simulating the filtering of a signal that's come through a communication system and had noise added to it, and then the demodulation, and then the further filtering. And what we're going to do is vary the power of the noise that's added to the simulated message signal and measure the output signal to noise ratio. So that takes into account the fact that the noise that's added to the signal is modified by the demodulator. So in the last lecture we looked at the theory for the output SNR for an FM system, and what you'll do in the assignment is compare that theoretical result with what you get from a simulation. So where you've had, because in a simulation you'll add different realisations of noise signals, and also the message signal. Well, there'll be two sorts of message signals, a sine wave and a random signal, and it doesn't necessarily mean that when you calculate the SNR that it corresponds with theory. Okay, so the whole point of this assignment is to give you some help in understanding the demodulation process and in particular, signal-to-noise ratios. And we won't actually simulate the carrier modulation part because that would involve a lot more samples in our simulation. So a lot more samples of the message signal, and that would slow everything down. So what we're really doing is it's like we're transmitting an FM modulated signal at baseband, so at 0 hertz. And what that means to us in practice is that we're really generating the phasor representation of an FM modulated signal, both the noise and the signal itself. And most of that is explained in the handout. Okay, so just going back to the handout. Alright, so it probably looks quite long to you. There's 6 pages there. Oh, by the way, you'd also have a blank page stapled at the end. That was unintentional. The printer added that in for no apparent reason, but obviously you can use that to write notes on if you need to. So it doesn't actually mean anything that it's there. But most of this 6 pages is, so I'm scrolling through from the top down, you can see there's sections 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's just extra explanation for what you're actually asked to do in the assignment and some pointers to how to go about doing it. The actual questions are on the last page, so where it says 9 tasks to be performed. And so really what you need to focus on doing is answering parts 1 through 8 as written on that last page. So for example, part 2 is just the generation of a message signal. And if you look back to the start of the handout, we're told to, it says right above part 2, that you do parts 2 through 8 for a message signal which is both a sinusoid and a random signal. And then at the start where we talk about there's some paragraphs talking about what the modulating signal is. So in the first case where we have a sinusoid, all you have to do to answer part 2 is to generate this message signal M. And so in MATLAB you generate T for 100,000 samples and use the sine function to generate your message signal. Okay, so quite a bit of this assignment is to do with generating random signals with a certain bandwidth. And this part, one part B, which is titled Random Signal, there's over half a page there, is all about the process by which you do that. Now, so the simplest way to simulate a random signal in something like MATLAB is to generate independent random samples from the distribution that you want your random signal to have, which in this case is Gaussian. And in MATLAB, the function rand n is a function which will do that. So if you call rand n with a parameter of 100,000, you'll get 100,000 independent samples of a Gaussian random variable. But all that means is if you were to plot that as a function of time, is that you'd get a whole bunch of random numbers. So this is our random number, X. And really it's as if these random numbers were an ideal white noise process, because there's it's as if we've sampled a white noise process at an infinite sampling frequency. But because we want a band-limited random process, what we do is filter these samples. And that's what the rest of all of this is all about. It's about taking some sequence of random samples, which are completely independent, and what that would then give you is a signal that, suppose we have our time with discretized time with a spacing, something like that. What that would really do is take our random samples, maybe spaced, which would in reality be spaced something like that, and fill in the points in between, so that what we end up with is a low-pass process. Alright, it might be better if later on I demonstrate that to you in MATLAB. I think I already showed some demonstrations of this process without talking it through. But hopefully you get the gist of what I'm talking about, which is that if you have some filter which is designed to have a certain bandwidth, so we have a cutoff frequency and so forth, and apply random samples to it, you'll get a low-pass random process. All right, now, as part of this, Let's go back to these slides. Now, as I already said, everything we've looked at is continuous, so continuous in time and amplitude. And so a simulation of a continuous analog system in MATLAB means digitization and quantization of amplitude. And also, you'll find in the assignment that we need to integrate when we modulate a signal and take a derivative when we demodulate. So, in which case, we need to really approximate those integrals by summations and the derivatives by differences. And that's also pointed out in the handout. So, on page 3, you'll see right at the top the expression for an FM modulated signal in terms of the phase. The phase is related to the message signal via an integral. What you'll need to do once you've generated the message signal is to generate this phase by summing rather than integrating. And similarly, when in the demodulation stage, where ideally we would be differentiating a phase, you use a difference instead of a derivative. Okay, so coming back to the filters, so if you look closely at the specs, you'll see that there's four filters labelled H1, H2, H3 and H4, although really there's only three because H2 is the same as H4. Now, the specifications are given in terms of a continuous analog system, and this is what I keep saying, MATLAB means we have a digital system, and that means a conversion from an analog filter to a digital filter is necessary. And if you've done courses in digital signal processing, you would hopefully have come across that concept already, concepts of frequency warping and the use of the bilinear transform, which are techniques for converting a continuous filter to a digital filter. And a very useful function in MATLAB which will help you in that process is bilinear. Now, if you go to MATLAB and type help bilinear, there's two or three different ways you can use the bilinear function. So make sure you don't just look at the help and use the very first usage of bilinear. I mean, it may be that you do want to use the first, but each different usage has different numbers of parameters, and depending on how you want to use it, you need to make sure you're giving it the right parameters. Now, although it's probably the first thing you need to make sure you do to complete the assignment is to generate these filters, this course is not about digital signal processing. Okay, so if you have no idea what frequency warping is, or the bilinear transform is, or converting from a continuous to a digital filter, then just make sure you come and ask me. And if it seems like enough people are having trouble with it, I'll spend some time in the next lecture after the mid-semester break going through that. So if you do need help with that, then please tell me early so that I can go through some more details about that. And yeah, there's a little bit more on that in the assignment, so on the assignment handout. So at the bottom of page one, sorry, the top of page two, gives you the bilinear transformation, which is a conversion from S, so S as in a filter written as H of S, to one in discrete time, i.e. H of Z. Okay, all right, before I talk about the output SNR a little more, just to try to simplify exactly what it is you're supposed to do. all you're being asked to do is to generate some message signal. So we'll call that M of T. Two cases, there's the sine wave and there's random M of T. And then to modulate that, so we're simulating the modulation part of a communication system, except remember that we're not using a large carrier frequency. So really the modulation is just to integrate the message signal. So we're transforming, we're transforming to FM. Then we simulate the communications channel by adding noise, so you need to simulate a noise signal. And the process of simulating the noise signal is much the same as generating the random message signal. So it uses those filters I've been talking about. And then we have our noisy signal being demodulated. So we have an input to our demodulator, which is the sum of these, the message and the noise. Sorry, the modulated message and the noise. And then at the output of the demodulator, we want to calculate the SNR. Okay, on this diagram, I've left out a couple of the filtering stages, but this is the basic crux of what you want to do. Generate a signal, add noise, demodulate it, and do a calculation. And now, because we're working with phases, i.e. we're not going to modulate onto a carrier, this signal here is really a phaser, so if we call that V tilde, this is a message signal in phaser representation, is A times E to the J phi, where phi is the frequency modulated message signal, and the noise in its phasor representation if we write it in the same way as in the lecture slides makes more sense to write it in terms of a real and imaginary component. Okay, so really, to generate the noise, we're not just generating a single signal, we're generating two signals because we want both the in-phase and quadrature components of the noise. Alright, so we've got the theoretical formula for SNR from lectures, and we want to compare it to what we get experimentally out of our simulation. Now, the only trouble with that is, at the output of our demodulator, over here, we're going to have, after we do in MATLAB, the operation that gives us some output from the demodulator, it's going to consist of a signal plus noise, and we don't really know what part of that signal is the message signal and which part is the noise. So we need some way to separate the signal from the noise. So if you look at the handout, in part 7, we talk about having a reference signal and correlating the demodulator output with that reference signal in order to find this parameter, lambda. So the reference signal is really what you get at the output of the demodulator if you don't add any noise at all. So it's as if we have a noiseless system. And we also assume that the noise at the output of the demodulator is such that it adds to the message signal multiplied by some constant lambda, and we don't know what that is. So if we know what lambda is, then we can find the noise component at the output by subtracting lambda times the reference signal, both of which we know, from the output of the demodulator. And at the top of page 4, there's a procedure for calculating lambda, given you know the reference signal. Okay, so one other thing that you should be able to tell from the assignment, or in fact the questions ask you to consider this, is about the threshold effect for frequency modulation systems. So this is covered in the slides, the lecture notes on 3 slides, so we'll have a quick look at that now. So we didn't actually talk about this in the last lecture. So what happens in a frequency modulation demodulator is that if the noise is too large prior to demodulation, then the demodulation process is no longer linear, and we say that, well, the system is below threshold, meaning that the signal component of our noisy pre-detection signal, so the signal prior to demodulation, the signal is just too noisy for the detector to work properly. And if you look at our plots in the notes of showing the output SNR against input power to noise ratio, for small enough input SNRs, we get, instead of having this nice linear decrease in output SNR, we get a sudden drop-off. And that's where this is indicating that threshold effect. And going back to the slides on this, it's possible to work out a critical value for that output power to noise ratio. You can work out a rule of thumb that if that pre-detection SNR is less than 10 dB, then that's the point where that threshold effect occurs. And the sort of hand-wavy way of explaining why this happens is that, rather than look at this diagram, if we look back at our phasor diagram showing if we have the message component phasor and then we add the noise to it, the noise at the output of the demodulator is the noise that occurs from this angle, or in this picture here, this angle. If the noise is really large, what can happen is this angle can be so large that the envelope can entirely circle the origin, as this slide here tries to indicate. And when that happens, it's as if that phase jumps from by a factor of 2 over pi, and the derivative of that gives in the output noise a large pulse known as a click. So in the assignment, I think it's questions, if we go back to it, in question 6, you're asked to actually plot the output signal and the output noise for signal to noise ratio of 17 dB. And in that plot, you should hopefully see some of those clicks that were indicated in the slide. So your noise signal might end up looking something like this, with the odd so-called click in its amplitude. Okay, and the final point that I've put up on this slide is that now you're actually plotting the output SNR against the received signal power divided by the noise power spectral density times bandwidth, which is not quite the same as the pre-detection signal to noise ratio. So make sure you understand what I mean by that and what the difference is. Okay. By the way, I'll make sure these slides are up on the webpage so you can refer to exactly what I have here later if you haven't been able to copy everything down. Alright, now you may... Well, hopefully most of you are fairly familiar with MATLAB, but you may not have come across all the functions which are really would be really useful for this assignment, so I've listed a few of the crucial ones here. Obviously, if you don't know anything about a function, then use MATLAB's help command or use the help window. You'll definitely need to use filter. So the filter function takes two vectors, so the A, often called A and B coefficients of a filter, of a digital filter, plus the input signal and gives you the filtered output signal. You may need to use the bilinear function to do the frequency warping required to convert the continuous time filter to discrete time. Rand N is just a Gaussian random number generator. You may need unwrap, which is explained in the handout. And Freak Z is a handy way for plotting the frequency response of a digital filter, which you're asked to do in question one. Alright, some more basic functions are those to do with manipulating complex numbers. So you'll have, well, a lot of your signals in this assignment will be complex, so they'll have real and imaginary parts. Real just takes the real part of a complex number or a vector of complex numbers. Image takes the imaginary part, and the rest should also be self-explanatory, so conjugate, complex conjugate. Sum may be useful, so that just a sum just takes a vector and adds up all its components. If you haven't used the operators dot star, dot slash and so on, all they do is if you have A and B and say Y equals A dot times B, if A is some vector and B is a vector of the same size, A dot times B just gives you element by element multiplication. So okay, so with a, hopefully you already know all that. Now you're asked to hand up some plots. I've just listed here a few of the commands that you can use in a MATLAB script for making the plots look nice. So you can add X and Y labels, a legend, change the axis and so on. For the first probably 4 or 5 years I was using MATLAB, I would do all of that just by clicking on my figure window and using the mouse and the drop-down menus to do all of that. Well, it actually can be a lot easier if you do it in a script using these functions, if you know how to use them. But once again, don't worry too much about making things look really nice if you don't know how to do it. The main thing is that whatever you hand up, it clearly indicates exactly what is on your plots. Okay, so I suggest getting started with the assignment by just breaking it down into its components. So, for example, because generation of the signal and noise requires the filters, obviously you may need to do your filter design first. So that's one self-contained component, is to generate those digital filters. Once you have a filter, which, well, you could create any filter in MATLAB, and you could do parts to it. Section 2, you could generate a signal and noise using a filter. It may not be the right filter, but you'd have a separate component in your project which is to take some filter and generate a signal from it. Also, the modulation, well, this should probably have modulation as a separate subcomponent from the demodulator as well. The correlator and so on I'd suggest getting all of those working separately, maybe in that order. Okay, so just go back to the handout one last time. So the block diagram on page 5 also should indicate conceptually exactly what you need to do. So a lot of this, well, there's two stages, the transmitter and channel stage and the receiver stage. You can think of those as conceptually different parts of the simulation. A large part of the transmitter and channel stage is to generate the signal, and this entire part of the building block is to generate the signal and noise. So over here where I wrote that the phaser that is the signal prior to demodulation, you should hopefully see where each of the parts of this are generated in this diagram. So we have the Gaussian random number generator that generates both the in-phase and quadrature components of the noise. Separate Gaussian random number generator, which generates numbers which are then filtered, and scale generates the random message signal. This part here indicates the modulation part, so the message signal gets integrated. And to get the phase in the phasor representation of the signal. At the receiver, we then just take the output of this whole stage, filter it, then do the demodulation part of it, which involves taking a derivative, and finally filtering one last time. And it's this signal here which needs to be correlated with the reference signal to separate the output signal and noise. Okay, so that's all I'll say about the assignment for now, unless there's any questions at this stage, but I'd suggest just having a look at it and trying to get started. Make sure that, feel free at any time to email me or leave a message on the discussion board, anything you're having difficulty with, and if need be, I can talk through different parts of the assignment in the lectures between now and the due date. Alright, so in the last 15 minutes I'll briefly go through a few of the slides and exercises that in my limited amount of feedback I got an indication that may need some further explanation. So we may not get through everything I have here, but most of the ones we'll look at are actually exercises from the slides rather than exercises from the textbook. Okay, so the first one was a slide from part zero of the course which asks you to complete the square for a case where we have some real valued expression f in terms of complex numbers as well as real numbers. And it turns out that why this is a useful expression comes up in one of the other exercise questions, and I think it's in, if I scroll down, it's slide 413, so in part 4 of the course actually uses this expression. Alright, now since you have been able to download the solutions, I won't go through this in great detail, but the key to this question is, well, it might be a bit easier if you think about completing the square for real numbers. So in which case we'd have something like, say we have some quadratic expression with coefficients a, b and c. We want to be able to write it like x minus some constant squared plus some constant. And the reason you might want to do that is it makes it easier to solve for x. So if you can do that, you might find it easier to actually write in the case of complex coefficients B and C, such as this solution here. So what you need to do is consider y itself as constant, because it's constant with respect to x, and you can see that b times y over a and this whole term here are independent of x, so they're, like, as I've written here, constants. And so to find this expression, you need to solve for those constants. Okay, so another question was slide 2.6. So this is the part of the course on Fourier transforms and Fourier series. So what you're asked to do is, supposing we have some time domain signal x, which is periodic, and the periodic part of it, which is repeated, is some function g. So we can write this periodic signal in terms of an infinite sum over g, time shifted. Now, because this signal is periodic, it has a Fourier series, so this expression here is just the general expression for Fourier series, where x sub n is the Fourier coefficient. The next line takes the Fourier transform of the Fourier series, and what we're asked to show is that the Fourier coefficients, this is its definition, can be written in terms of the Fourier transform of this function g. So the way to do this is, well, the steps are that you need to substitute for x of t. So this x of t here is equal to, if we write x of t as its Fourier series, so this whole component here gets substituted in here. And then what we're left with is an integral and then a sum. And the trick is to change the order of the sum and the integral. Then you can integrate what's left, and doing that integration needs a change of variable. So what I'll do is go to the solutions. Okay, so what I've been saying is, we start with this expression, substitute for x of t in terms of the sum. So we have an integral of a sum, change the order of the sum and the integral, and we're left with this integral here, which, if we make a substitution of, or change a variable, t dash equals t minus kt, which changes the limits of integration. What we have then is a sum of non-overlapping integrals, an infinite sum of non-overlapping integrals. So if we have some function which we're integrating from minus kt to t minus kt, and then we sum, so that's the integral from minus kt to t minus kt is this area, and then we sum up from all every term in that sum is something that doesn't overlap with all the others. So the total sum is a single integral from minus to plus infinity, which is, and that leaves us with the definition of the Fourier transform. So to do that question, you just need to do a few mathematical tricks like that. So the change of summation and integration, and use your knowledge of integration. All right. So another one that was ticked on my feedback sheet was 2.18. This one should really be fairly straightforward if you look at your table of Fourier transforms. So you need to use the fact, you need to use your knowledge of complex numbers and the Fourier transforms. So since we have the Fourier transform of x of t and x of f for a Fourier transform pair, and we also have that, if you look at your table of transforms, the complex conjugate of t and that of x star minus f are a Fourier transform pair, which means that using one of the properties of Fourier transforms, x star of minus t and x complex conjugate of the Fourier transform of f are a Fourier transform pair. And then if we multiply this and this together in the frequency domain, we have x star f, x star minus f. Here's where we use a property of complex numbers. Some complex number what I meant to multiply together was this one and this one. So I should have switched these around, but x of f times this complex conjugate is equal to the magnitude squared. And since we're multiplying together in the frequency domain, we have a convolution in the time domain, and that gives us that this right hand side here is the convolution. Now, if you look at the definition for the convolution on the table at the back of the notes, then we'd actually have this the other way around, t minus lambda, and because we have a minus t here, this goes to t plus lambda, I think, if I remember rightly, but so that's the only difference between how this expression is written and what we have in the table. All right. Another one from section 2 is on slide 237. So you're asked to given an expression for x of t, so x of t is 4 sinc 2t, then what is the spectrum of its Hilbert transform? And therefore, find the spectrum of y of t, which is this representation of y of t in terms of its in-phase and quadrature components. So if you look at the solutions, there's two ways you can do this. You can do it entirely mathematically, or you can do it graphically, which recommended is the best way to do this sort of question. So, given that x of t is 4 sinc 2t, you should by now be able to find its Fourier transform in terms of the rect function. So, graphically, x of t has Fourier transform, which is a rect function with maximum value 2 between minus 1 and 1. Alright, now remembering that the Hilbert transform in the frequency domain is minus j times the sine of f times Fourier transform of x, you should be able to get the Fourier transform of the Hilbert transform. If you look at x of f, if f is positive, then sine of f is also positive. And so all positive frequencies in the Fourier transform of x get multiplied by minus j. So positive frequencies we get if we were to positive frequencies get multiplied by minus j, so have value maximum value minus 2j, whereas negative frequencies, the sine of f is minus 1, so negative frequencies get multiplied by minus j times minus 1 or plus j, so graphically, the Fourier transform of the Hilbert transform of x looks like this. Okay, so that answers the first part of that question. Now we also need to find the spectrum of y. Now if we let y1 of t equal x of t multiplied by the cosine term, since f naught is 10, we have frequency of 20. You should also be able to take, if you know the Fourier transform of x of t, which we have here, multiplied by a cosine, by now you should know this is equivalent to a frequency shift, and the Fourier transform of y1 gets shifted, so this whole spectrum gets shifted down to, maybe I should draw that to the same, roughly the same scale. Its amplitude gets halved and becomes centered at 10. Okay, so then you can do the same thing with the Hilbert transform term. So if you let y2 of t equal Hilbert transform of x times sine 20 pi t, calculate its Fourier transform. It's the same procedure. This Fourier transform gets shifted down and up and has its amplitude halved. And because we have a sine here, the j that we get from our sine, if we write our sine in terms of complex, in terms of exponentials, cancels out these j's here. So y2 of f is looks something like that. So then, finally, what you're asked to do is find the Fourier transform of y of t. That's, so in the Fourier domain, that Fourier transform is simply this Fourier transform and subtract this Fourier transform. So if you do that graphically, I haven't lined these up properly, but if you subtract frequencies between 9 and 10 from these, those frequencies cancel out, whereas frequencies between 10 and 11 reinforce, and you're left with, maybe I'll draw that on with a different colour, Fourier transform of Y is only non-zero between 10 and 11, between frequencies of 10 and 11, and has amplitude 2. Okay, so possibly what I've written up on the board isn't enough for you to go through this again yourself, but it's all in the solutions, and the point is to try to talk you through it so that if you look at the solutions and you're confused about something, that you'll see what's going on. All right, so I had a few more to go through, but we've run out of time. So at some point later on in the course, we might go through a few more of these questions.